Welcome to the Balanced Wellness Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Courtney Ciccoletti, your pharmacist turned functional medicine practitioner and integrative nutrition health coach. I'm on a mission to help others find alternative solutions to the chronic issues that far too often consume our lives. Balance is an individual journey that looks different for everyone. So on this show, I sit down with other leaders in the wellness space to discuss ways you can achieve it. We tackle topics like recovering from chronic illness, developing habits to improve mental health, and even how natural remedies like CBD can help aid in the healing process. It's time to find a solution to balance your wellness. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I am here with Kelsey Baker. She is a pediatric occupational therapist and lactation counselor with over a decade of experience in the infant to toddler demographic and uses a holistic approach to help families optimize their baby's development. Kelsey is the owner and lead therapist of Be Well Occupational Therapy Company based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and serves families virtually worldwide. Welcome, Kelsey. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, Courtney.
I am excited to like geek out and talk gut microbiome today from all stages of life. Yes. I know that we are both passionate on this topic, and I would love for you to share more information for our listeners, especially all of the mamas out there who are breastfeeding and need guidance in this area.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. I am really passionate about breastfeeding and early childhood development and infant feeding in general. I think my personal experience with my daughter, she was born with ties, but we pushed through with breastfeeding and I just didn't know all the things I know today. And we were able to breastfeed for 2 years, but I was so nervous about nipple confusion. I waited too long to introduce the bottle, and I wasn't able to utilize any bottles ever with her, unfortunately. So that was a fun journey and learning experience for me as a therapist who thought I had it all figured out before going into parenthood. And as we all know, parenthood, you know, throws us lots of loops and turns and things to figure out. So that wasn't the case, but it led me down the rabbit hole of tethered oral tissues and fascial strain and understanding more of how the body works together as a unit, and also adding in that gut microbiome piece. So I'm really excited to talk to you about it today.
This is awesome. So what were you, was your own experience, did this lead you more in the direction to in your career as you were going through it as a mom?
Totally. I have always utilized my profession to supplement my personal knowledge, and I try to tie the two together. I went into pediatrics knowing that I wanted to be a parent and knowing that I wanted to have kids. So I was like, why wouldn't I learn everything I could possibly learn about childhood development and things that I see as important in that? So I was really lucky. I got to specialize in pediatrics through my grad program, and I went right into early intervention when I started my career. So that gave me a lot of great experience, and I had awesome mentors. And so that gave me a good like physical developmental reflex integration piece. And then as I started serving families in Philadelphia, I saw that feeding and nutrition was a big piece that I was missing. Like, that's just something we talked about in school, but it wasn't something I felt really confident with. So I started taking all of the feeding courses that I could and just really trying to teach myself more about nutrition as I went along so I could give proper guidance to the families that I was working with. And this was all pre-kids, so I was setting myself up for success here. And then when I got pregnant, I added in the lactation piece. So I became a lactation counselor. And again, I was like, I got this. This is going to be great. And my kids are my kids, and I love them so much. And they have taught me way more than I will ever learn in any school or continuing ed program, as I'm sure you can relate to.
Absolutely. It's so true. And I think so many of us in this area, you know, that get into this holistic health, functional medicine, when we're looking at
nutrition and all of these things, I think so many of us have healed ourselves or family members or something on a close level that we've taken our careers to a different approach. You know, I'm the pharmacist who, you know, wants to do everything but fill a prescription. It's kind of like, okay, that's like the last resource. I want to try and promote a healthy lifestyle and eating right and doing all of the good stuff and supplementing. And when it comes down to it, it's like, okay, sometimes there is a time and a place for prescriptions, you know, they can be life-saving. However, it's the last line. I like to you know, promote all of the good stuff. And the first most important thing, as you know, and as a lot of our listeners know, is just the gut microbiome. You know, it's so important. But in general, you know, we talk about toxic load and all of these things to do to promote, you know, a healthy gut and taking probiotics and, you know, eating clean and green. But from a standpoint as, you know, as a mom and looking back to, God, I wish that I knew even a quarter of what I know now when my son, who's going to be 16 this year, which is like mind blowing to me. But, you know, it's like when I wish that I would have even known a portion of what I know now. You know, in school, we didn't learn about any of the things that I furthered my education on, you know, with, you know, looking at the gut microbiome and the whole brain gut correlation and how, you know, it's the essential, you know, key to our immune system and everything else in our and just a happy, healthy brain. So as a mom, as a pediatric occupational therapist, how important is it breastfeeding versus formula? What is the main, you know, what are, I mean, not even having to give statistics and, oh, there's this percentage, but like looking at it from that standpoint, how much of a difference does it make in a child, their health overall when they're breastfed versus bottle fed, formula fed?
It's a great question, and it's a little bit of a hot topic. Obviously, there's a lot of marketing towards fed is best, which is true, 1,000%. I am very much not anti-formula, but breast milk is always going to be the gold standard, right? There's nothing that changes with the needs of your baby like breast milk does. So it's pretty amazing that our bodies respond and create antibodies to things and change amino acid levels and fat protein breakdowns and all of those things for babies as they need throughout the day. And it's just kind of amazing. So like, why mess with that if you don't have to? And also it's okay and good to use formula if and when needed. Right? So thinking about the individual needs of your baby, right? Is it a dairy issue? Is it something in your diet? Is it a supply issue? Like there's always reasons. And like, thank goodness we have formula for all of those scenarios. But I think offering the education to expectant parents and people that are planning to have babies at some point and thinking about how they can, you know, best support their microbiome and their mineral stores and all of those things to be able to have a healthy pregnancy and an easy delivery and all of those things, of course, but also create the best food for that baby. It all ties together. So I'm a big fan of combo feeding, and obviously pumping is still breastfeeding. Right? You're still interacting with your baby. You're still snuggling. You're still smelling and kissing their head and figuring out like your body is responding to that baby. Even if baby isn't directly at the breast, if you're pumping and giving bottles of your pumped milk, you're still getting all of those same benefits. You might not get the orofacial and like oral development benefits as much, but there's so many things we can do to optimize that through kind of purposeful and mindful bottle feeding that can be supportive of a breastfeeding journey or supportive of just the oral facial development. So I think the more education we can give to expectant parents, the better. So I'm actually working on a prenatal course right now, and I don't know when that will come out. That depends on lots of factors in my life, but that's my goal for the next year.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So if you had a mama-to-be coming to you right now, for all the mamas-to-be listening right now, and they're coming to you and saying, okay, I don't know where to start. You know, I want to breastfeed. How long should I breastfeed for? What are the benefits of breastfeeding? You know, how can I make my husband more involved in the process of breastfeeding? Like, how do you support you know, these confused mamas who are, you know, going into this for the first time and just need guidance.
It is a lot. It's really overwhelming. The WHO and now the AAP recommends breastfeeding until 2 years old, which our culture and society do not support in any way, shape, or form, with family leave usually ending at 6 weeks, if not earlier, if you get any at all. So it's a real challenge. And I think the more front-loaded you can be with your planning and education to set yourself up for success, you have a better likelihood of hitting your breastfeeding goals. If you know, like, it's just not going to be feasible, I say, ideally, we get to at least 6 months, but also there are so many other factors that go into it, right? You can't control everything. So giving yourself the education so you can make informed choices along the way, and kind of, if there's some issue during delivery and you need to pivot, and there needs to be some formula given because you're in recovery and you just aren't able to get to your baby or whatever, you know, what can we do to kind of mitigate that from, you know, when you can on forward, right? There's syringe feeding, there's cup feeding, there's, you know, being purposeful about your pumping when you do have the time. But I think having some lactation support, whether that be an IBCLC or a CLC, somebody who can give you some prenatal education and then be there to support you in those early days, so you can kind of be like, hey, this is what's happening, how can we shift our plan from there, is really important. Because I think so many people go into like, okay, this is what I want my birth plan to look like, but they just think that breastfeeding is this natural thing that will just happen and be totally fine. Or they have a plan to just be like, nope, we're not going to do that. We're just going to formula feed because of XYZ reason. And that is also super valid. But maybe we need to think about what bottles we're offering and how that's going to support oral development. So there's just lots of different factors. And I think having some professional guidance, because our society and cultural guidance is just not there. So many people have never seen anyone breastfeed. So many people just have no clue about their own anatomy, as well as baby's anatomy, and just how those two things work together. So it's really hard. And then as far as partner support, it's a challenge. But again, I think going into education together, so they understand the importance of breastfeeding or whatever your feeding plan is going to be, and the reasons behind that, rather than just giving them a direction and then they have to kind of mindly follow. If they understand why, and they also share in that importance of that goal of breastfeeding or whatever it may be, limiting air intake or making sure they get that nice open mouth. Like, there's so many factors that go into it, but you want to make sure you're on the same page and it's a group effort. And I would also say, you know, thinking about how you can delegate. Do you want to get a meal service for the first month? Do you want to hire a cleaning lady for that first month? Do your in-laws want to come stay with you for that first month or something, you know, and kind of weighing your pros and cons there, because we really do need a village, and it takes work to create that in today's world. And that's really hard.
Absolutely. And as I'm listening to you, I'm like, my gosh, I wish that I had you in my life many years ago. Because it is so hard. And at the time, I didn't have any family members, you know, I didn't have, you know, even all of my cousins who were all, you know, older than me and had already gone through it. A lot of them did not breastfeed. So I didn't really have like the support to, and I had a couple, I have one friend who was my go-to. If you're listening, Jamie, shout out to Jamie. She was amazing. She breastfed all of her three boys. Like, she was a rock star. She was like my go-to question person, but I made it with my son. I had to supplement almost instantaneously. He was pretty big at birth, and I don't know if I just wasn't, you know, producing a lot, but it was so, you know, I think that support is so, so important. And, you know, just understanding it and understanding even the little tips and tricks that are all so important that get baby adjusted, and that are, you know, the benefits just overall from breastfeeding for the baby. You know, it's just wild. And I think it's so important just to bring awareness to people, you know, which is what I hope our intention today is to do. So in general, you know, we always talk about like gut microbiome and, you know, we look at all of the things that we can do just at different stages of life. You know, when we take antibiotics, how we can prep for that with like a good probiotic and, you know, looking at, okay, a baby starting from just scratch, you know, just a fresh baby belly waiting for the good things to go in and all of the good nurturing things that we want to do to help preserve that gut microbiome and set, you know, set babies off for, you know, for success to have a good, healthy, not only just gut, just the whole body, mind, body, soul. So looking at, you know, looking at nutrition and looking at breastfeeding, how much of a difference is it when you're talking about formula versus breastfeeding? I mean, obviously our bodies are so amazing, you know, just a woman's body, just being able to sustain a human being both in your body and then after your body literally just needs, you know, you have everything equipped that you need to give your baby. How much of a difference is it when it comes to like the immune system? And, you know, do we see a lot of, you know, are there a lot of, you know, case studies, statistics out there where if, you know, if a child is solely breastfed or a combination of breast and formula, are they in general, is there a reduction of, you know, illness or viruses or even, you know, even overall like autoimmune conditions, you know, that kind of thing overall, like how much, you know, I don't know how to word it properly, but like how can a baby benefit more from breastfeeding versus formula?
I think that there's a lot of factors that go into it, right? So there have been studies to show breastfed versus formula babies, like there can be a slight difference in IQ, but it's not significantly, you know, remarkable. And I think that it has more to do with the compounding factors of the environment rather than formula versus breast milk, right? Because there's always going to be valid reasons for choosing formula. Like it is here for a reason. And I think thinking about how we can reduce maybe plastic exposure and we don't heat up plastic bottles with that formula. And we think about, you know, are we using hand sanitizer and then touching baby's face? That all of those things are going to disrupt the microbiome, honestly, more than formula. So when we're just putting baby to breast, right, we're not worrying about washing our hands. We're not sterilizing bottles. Like we probably are to some degree, but the frequency is less. And I think all of those occurrences actually add up to be more significant in altering the microbiome and maybe adjusting and kind of messing with your immune system more than formula exclusively. So I think there's a lot of other pieces to the puzzle that go into that. And I don't know of any studies that follow all of those variables because I feel like that would be incredibly challenging. But just anecdotally in my clinical experience and my personal experience and kind of seeing all of those things add up, it does seem to make a difference with the level of ear infections that you're getting as a child. But that also ties into, were you able to breastfeed? Because most people, I want to say 86% of parents want to breastfeed. I might have just made up that number. I'm really bad with statistics, so don't quote me on that. But then that drops to, I want to say half by the time you get to 6 months, right? So that is partially education. It's partially level support. It's partially, you know, ending family leave. And part of that also might be baby just physically can't feed from the breast that easily. So it might be tongue tie. It might be lip tie. It might be low tone. It might be high palate. Like there's lots of things that go into that. And I think that's, again, why getting a good lactation support person who understands oral anatomy and will do a whole functional assessment and also understand how to help build your supply is really important.
It's amazing because, you know, even like you said, like my mom, my brother is older than me. My mom, you know, started breastfeeding with my brother and he was actually severely allergic to her milk. And it was something where she had such a bad a bad experience with it when I was born. She didn't even try because it was so scary that, you know, just everything that, you know, that my brother had gone through and that her body went through. So it was like, I think she was scared when it came down to me. So, you know, it's, there's so many obstacles that could come back, you know, with the intentions of, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do going into it. And then, like you said, like there's just curveballs and twists and turns and so many different things that, you know, that set us out on these paths. So, you know, another thing that you had mentioned that, you know, that can be an obstacle is just the different anatomy of the mouth. Different, you know, different children have different structural, you know, situations. So what is it, what are the things that, you know, that people could encounter that, you know, where the child is having trouble feeding and how can people like you help?
Yeah. So, tongue tie is a very hot topic right now. And it is said to be a little bit of a fad, but there's even like biblical texts, referencing tongue ties, and there's kind of more medieval literature referencing tongue ties and showing tools that would be used to cut tongue ties. So I think that the level of awareness is shifting, obviously. And I think we're coming off of a couple generations that were really pushed with formula and bottle feeding and how that was convenient. And that was, you know, the thing that strong women would do because then they could go do other things and baby could be taken care of by anybody and you're not, you know, quote unquote, ruining your body. And it was quote unquote, better for baby. And in some cases it very much is, but that's an individualized thing. So we're coming off of these generations that lacked a lot of cultural knowledge. And now I've tangented myself off of the original question. So what am I trying to answer now? Sorry.
No. So like what are different structural things? So tongue tie is one. And then how do you help, you know, how do you help mom and baby, you know, overcome this?
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that. So tongue tie limits the range of motion that the tongue can move in, right? So to be able to feed efficiently, your tongue needs to be able to elevate, extend out of the mouth slightly, or at least past your lower gum line. And also the sides of the tongue have to come up, and then it does this nice peristalsis wave-like motion to actually transfer milk from breast or bottle. You also need to have a nice lip flange. If the lips are kind of pursed in, like grandma without dentures in, they can't get a good seal and you're going to get more air intake. It's also going to be really painful if you're at the breast. So you have to see what baby's anatomy looks like. A big thing right now too is, and there's actually more and more studies about this coming out, babies that are being born in the past few generations have progressively smaller jaws. So which is really interesting. And a lot of people think that has to do with the processed food and agricultural system, right? We're not eating, you know, food from the farm as much, and we're eating more softer processed foods. So you just don't need a strong jaw to eat those foods.
Wow.
And a lot of, yeah, right? Crazy. A lot of kid foods are really soft, like, you know, Goldfish, they just crunch up really easily. Packets, purees, like all of those things that might be used longer than ideal. Because they're really convenient. All of those anatomical structures like tongue tie, lip tie, cheek ties can create more tension and compensations. So if you have a tongue tie, you're more likely to have a smaller recessed jaw and a higher palate, the roof of your mouth, which can lead to more mouth breathing because the roof of the mouth is the floor of the nose. So if you're palate is too high, your sinuses and your nasal passages are a little scrunched, so you get congested more easily, and you're more prone to mouth breathing, which will lead to more inflamed and enlarged adenoids and tonsils. And it can also impact the angle in which your eustachian tubes, your ear tubes, develop. So you're more prone to ear infections. And there's more studies coming out about sleep disordered breathing and ADHD. So if you're mouth breathing and you're snoring, especially as a child, that's a big red flag. And tongue tie ties into that all. So here I am tangenting again, but.
No, it's great information. I think these are all things that are so important for, you know, for parents, especially, you know, younger, inexperienced parents who are just trying to figure things out. You know, it's so overwhelming. This is just one little piece of the puzzle of trying to get the baby, of surviving the baby all day, you know?
Exactly, and keep that baby alive.
Right, like we gotta keep this baby alive and thriving. So this is like, this is like just one piece of the puzzle, and to have this information, it's amazing. So tangents are good. Tangents are really good because it's the little details that are very important. You know, you look at that and it's, you know, if the baby's not latched on properly, like you just said, it can lead to different infections and it can lead to different concerns later in life. And, you know, and just like ADHD, like that, it's real, you know? And I think that it's, you know, it's funny as, you know, as I go down my own journey in, you know, functional medicine, and I look at, you know, the things that I've learned over the past, you know, since I kind of dove into this space, it's just crazy to see that these things that are, you know, they're almost so basic, it's so almost seems like common sense that I think that, like, how could I not have known these things getting my doctorate level education as a pharmacist? But they're not things that are touched on and that we learn. And they're things that, you know, that over the years that I have taken an interest in and have helped, you know, my patients with, both in the pharmacy and my own, you know, in the functional medicine space. But I feel like it's very important to know these things and how they can affect just little things in the body are big things. So, you know, all of the many things that can disrupt the gut microbiome, there's so many things, you know, we could name a list. The list goes on, you know, anything that we're taking in our body from the environment, whether it's purpose, you know, whether it's on purpose, or whether it's, you know, preservatives in food, or whether it's just, you know, the air that we're breathing, you know, disrupt our gut microbiome in many ways. And I think it's, you know, it's important to know all these things. And if that imbalance occurs, all of the different things that it can lead to, and, you know, all of the things that we can do to help. And, you know, some of them are things that, you know, we can't help, you know, they're just things that just breathing and living. And, you know, it's, you know, you sit down and you look at all of the things, you know, especially as a parent and what we're feeding our children, and, you know, everything is in plastics, whether it's water in a bottle or whether it's something that's wrapped in plastic, or, I mean, just look at everything that's even safe or healthy that comes in a plastic, whatever, you know, all of these things that can disrupt the gut microbiome and cause, you know, quote unquote disease. You don't look at it like, oh, well, that was just because of the, you know, plastic that I unwrapped, you know, the my snack for my child. But, you know, there are things that being cognizant of all of these little things add up to like the big things, you know?
Totally, totally. And there's new research coming out too, saying that release of tongue tie, which includes like pre-op therapy, which is what I do. Then we go to a pediatric dentist for a release, and then I'll work with them post-op to kind of give full function to the tongue and work on that nasal breathing, work on improved feeding, so there's less air intake. But tongue tie release can lead to decreased GI symptoms and reflux symptoms in babies, which nobody wants an upset refluxy baby spitting up all the time. Like, that just doesn't feel good to you, right? Even if they're, quote unquote, a happy spitter, you know, losing the contents of what you just consumed isn't going to help you grow and thrive. So just on a basic level. So we need to kind of figure out why that's happening. And usually it's air intake, and usually it's a latch issue. But that in itself, just introducing air to the digestive system is challenging, and it disrupts that microbiome too.
Absolutely. That's probably the most important takeaway, I think, from, you know, from anything. You know, reflux is I don't know if it still holds true, but the number one drug dispensed in the pharmacy, probably still holding steady, might possibly be omeprazole, which is Prilosec. And I think so many people don't understand how terribly bad it is for our bodies. You know, it's okay if you have something that's a more acute, you know, okay, something's going on where we're going to use it for, you know, a couple of days a week, maybe 10 days. But anything more than that, you know, it destroys your gut microbiome. It messes up your mineral balance. It, you know, your magnesium, your calcium, all of these things that play a role in producing all of our hormones in our body. And when I say hormones, I don't mean sex hormones. I mean, you know, our thyroid hormones, our insulin production, you know, which is our entire absorption. And what, you know, like you just said, when we're eating things, are we absorbing it or are we spitting it up, you know, and on every level, from a baby to a grown up, you know, it's keeping that gut healthy. And we want to absorb all of the micronutrients that we're eating, and we want them to do good things in our body. And if we're, you know, if that's out of whack, you know, people are on these medications for years and years and years. Some people have been on them for, gosh, we're going on like 30, 40 years now that these drugs have been around, and people, you know, where it's a quick fix, and it's supposed to be like a quick fix, like, okay, be on it, go off of it, get everything situated with nutrition. And it's not that way. So starting a child out on a proton pump inhibitor, omeprazole, these things are, it's just not a great place to be. It's, you want to get it, that gut healed, and you want that gut to be absorbing the food that you're feeding the baby and all of the good stuff. So, you know, it's actually like so important on so many levels. And that's like the main takeaway, you know, with reflux and how it can just lead to so many things. And then trying to get off of those medications, you know, I work with people, you know, all the time trying to get off, and it causes like a rebound, like hyper acid secretion, trying to get off. And it takes so long to really taper slowly, and using different supplements and probiotics to really get that gut balance. So, you know, once you go down that rabbit hole, it's a long way out. It's not something that you want to really do with a baby. And of course the medication is there if you, you know, have a situation where it's, you know, it's a little bit more intricate and you need to use the medication, but, you know, hopefully getting it figured out and figuring out, you know, having a, you know, pediatric occupational therapist to say, is there a structural situation going on that we can work through this to avoid having the reflux and, you know, fix it from that root cause, which is what, you know, where I think we're both so passionate about.
Totally. Totally. I actually have a more challenging case right now. And the mom and I both are very hesitant to offer reflux medication. And it is usually my last resort. But there are times where, like you're saying, being on it for a short period of time to get to a place of comfort and ease for the baby so that we can work with them on maybe some nervous system regulation and actually practice those oral motor skills. And then we can get off of that quickly because we've, you know, maybe had the release, like we figure out the timeline. But I think that it can be a helpful tool when it's not marketed as the solution, right? So I think knowing all of the long-term impacts of that makes you use it really mindfully and only if needed. So it's not always a bad thing, like you're saying, to turn to a pharmaceutical, like they're there for a reason, but it shouldn't be our first line of defense. Like when you go to the pediatrician and you say your baby's spitting up, that's their first offering. Rather than, oh, why don't you try these things first, right? Change your bottle feeding position, talk to lactation, talk to your OT, you know, all those things. So it's really helpful to kind of have that long-term insight with, you know, those medications being the highest prescribed ones. Like that's huge.
It is. It's wild. And it's, you know, I feel like that shift has to take place more. And I feel like there's a lot of great practitioners out there, and, you know, and even great practitioners that have good intentions with, you know, that's a whole other rabbit hole to go down with, you know, healthcare and, you know, having that, you know, 7-8 minutes to talk to somebody and like in and out, boom, 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 where, you know, we should all in our space, in our, you know, we all have our specifics and have our lanes of expertise that are our area. And I'm so blessed that I met you because, you know, it's it's I can refer people to you and say, hey, we only have X amount of time when we're dealing with somebody, or we can guide somebody to a certain extent. But it's so great to have. I always say it's like your medical like toolbox, like your holistic health lifestyle toolbox, where there's so many different resources out there to help with so many small like niches where, you know, hey, this is what's going on. What do I do to solve it? Hey, there's people that work specifically on this that can set something in such a good path, and you know, and so many people just new moms and new parents and just expecting parents, just knowing that they have a resource, you know, to go to when they do have an issue, and you know that there's a way to fix things, whether it just be something that's just an adaptation thing that's just, you know, random, hey, this isn't working, I need some guidance and some coaching, versus, hey, there's structurally something going on here, and we need to work on this, because I want to give my baby the very best nutrition and, you know, foundation that I can.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's a great summary. And yeah, it's why I do what I do. I want to be as proactive as I possibly can, which is why I've just incrementally started working with younger and younger babies, because I see the progression and I see how challenging it can be to address something at 5 years old rather than at newborn, or ideally, you know, prenatally, we're kind of prepared for this. Maybe this is the second child and you kind of know your genetic predispositions and you kind of know what you're getting into to some degree. Every child is different, obviously. But I've been in practice long enough to have seen all of the children in certain families. And when the new baby comes, they're like, oh, yep, round two, round three, we're here for it. I see all of the signs and I don't want to have to go through all the things that I went through before. So we're going to cut it off at the pass. We're going to get in there before we even really see issues. And we just see enough of the signs of smaller jaw, open mouth posture, you know, falling asleep more easily at the breast, maybe getting some air intake. We can work on all those things. And while they are somewhat normal to a degree with newborns as they're figuring stuff out because they've never done this before, and you know, you might have done this before if you have consecutive children, but it's still new, it's still a different ball game each time, and you know what to expect to a degree, so you have to be a little bit more proactive. But yeah, I used to work with more toddler range kids, and then I started working more with babies under a year, and now primarily I see babies like under 4 months, not exclusively. Like I will see older kids and up to toddler preschool age, but for the most part my caseload is all newborns, because that's when I can make the most impact and share the most information. And now my new goal is to get to those expectant people, so that are, and planning for children, so we can know what they need to do.
I love it. I love your passion, and I love the whole, you know, prevention is everything, you know, now, even like you just said, taking it to before baby's still in the womb, like let's start there, because it's so important. And I just love it. I love your passion. I love what you're doing. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you. I'm so happy that we connected too. Like I love getting to chat with other like-minded people, and especially, you know, you're in the area. I'm going to be sharing a lot of clients back and forth, I'm sure. So
absolutely. I'm so excited. So for anybody listening, whether you're local to the Philadelphia area or you want to work virtually, we will have all of the information in the show notes, how you can reach out to Kelsey and get information more on what she does. And yeah, we're excited to, we're going to have some fun workshops, and we're talking and planning all kinds of fun stuff. So stay tuned.
It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be so awesome. Thank you so much for being on today, Kelsey.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Courtney. I'm thrilled to be here. So thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to the Balanced Wellness Solutions podcast. Please leave a 5-star review if anything in this show spoke to you, or share this show with a friend to spread the word and help others find the balance they may also be searching for. make sure to follow along with me on LinkedIn or Instagram at Dr. Courtney with a K, Ciccoletti, or check out my website at www.wellness-solutions.co to find out how we can possibly work together. Be well.